It's Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. Thank you so much for tuning in today. It's been said you can recognize trumpeter Herb Alpert within the first three notes of a song. Alpert's iconic style has been distinctive since he first came on the music scene with the song The Lonely Bull in the early 1960s. He dubbed his band the Tijuana Brass for that style, even though neither he nor his fellow band members were from Mexico. He also co-founded his own record company, A&M Records, which issued his albums through the 1960s to a wider and wider audience, perhaps none more so than his album Whipped Cream and Other Delights. That album was known, and still is known, almost as much for its risque cover as for its music. His record company boomed, and he went on to record movie and television music, collected 6 Grammy Awards, and more than a dozen gold records. Alpert later took up visual art and solo music and sold the record company to PolyGram in the late 1980s. More recently, he has recorded and performed with his wife, singer Lonnie Hall. We spoke with Herb Alpert ahead of a concert he played in Milwaukee back in the spring. Welcome to Lake Effect.
Thanks, Mitch.
Let me ask you this. What still excites you about standing in front of an audience and sharing the music?
Well, I really like playing. I started playing when I was 8, and I practice every day. I'm about making music. I dream about it. I like working with my wife, who's a world-class singer, and have a good time. I mean, it gives me energy, believe it or not. You know, I get off stage and people say, man, you must be really tired. I say, well, on the contrary, I feel innervated.
Well, and I've heard you say that you think of yourself as a visual musician, that the music conjures up an image in your head. Is that right?
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, when I had The Lonely Bull, which was the first record in 1962 that started A&M Records, I got a letter from a lady in Germany that thanked me for taking her on a vicarious trip to Tijuana. And ever since then, I was thinking, you know, that's what I want to make. I want to make visual music. I want to make music that conjures up images and takes people for a ride, including myself.
Were you known at that point already as Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, or was it that letter that got you thinking that this is the image I'm conveying?
Well, that Lonely Bull record was the top 10 at the time, and prior to that, I worked with Sam Cooke. I wrote Wonderful World with Sam and my then partner Lou Adler. We did, a bunch of Jan and Dean records, and then Alley-Oop. So, I had a little thing going, but I always wanted to play the trumpet and record, as a trumpet player.
You are also not just conjuring up visual images. You're also a visual artist. You do sculpture, right?
Oh, I've been painting for 43 years and sculpting for maybe 25. So, I do that, just about every day of my life. I'm a right-brained animal, so that's what I do.
Even as a right-brained animal, do you feel like do sculpture and painting fit a different part of your life than music, or is it really all about expression, regardless of how it comes out?
Yeah, I think it's about finding your element. My element is doing something artistic, and that gives me my daily rush.
If it were just one of those three, sculpture or painting or music, would that be too limiting? I mean, do you feel like that you almost have a luxury of being able to express yourself in any of these ways?
Well, I actually do, but I mean, music is my first love. Like I say, I started when I was 8. I'm addicted to it. I'm conditioned to play the horn every day, and you never quite get to the point where you feel like you've accomplished the instrument. It's just, Dizzy Gillespie once said, the closer I get, the farther it looks.
Well, and if I understand correctly, you are still at work on your 34th studio album, is that right?
Oh, yeah. Lonnie and I have been, we're at the tail end of it. It's really good. I mean, I say it's really good. Every time I finish an album, I used to go into my partner at A&M, Jerry Moss, and say, Jerry, man, this is the best album I've ever done, And this is the way I feel again, one more time. The 34th, it's the best one I've ever done.
Well, there'd be something wrong if it weren't getting better every time.
Well, I feel like, I always learn from the last one, and I try to do things that I didn't do on the last one. And, I'm continually playing every day, so I'm thinking about ways to make the music better.
Are there still surprises in the process for you?
Well, the surprises, I'm basically a jazz musician, so the surprise is what happens every time I play, you know, what when I play with my group or what folks are going to hear on the first at the Pabst Theater. It's all improv. And so, you know, every time's a new experience for me.
Let me ask you, maybe this is a strange question, but not being a trumpet player myself, does it get harder on the lips the longer you do this, or is it easier? Can you pick up a horn and the memory in your lips is much more present than it was, I mean, back in, say, 1962 or 63?
Yeah, actually, it gets much easier because right now at my age, I can get more for less. And fortunately, I studied with a teacher in New York who actually did not play trumpet, but he taught the physics of playing the instrument. So at that point in my life, I started learning what makes this sound. How do you get the most out of that sound? So I studied that, and now it seems like it's easier for me to play than ever.
Would you recommend, is that something that young trumpet players ought to spend some time on?
Oh, definitely. I think to understand the physics of the instrument is crucially important because it's not about blowing hard or trying to force something to happen. It happens, you know, in a very natural way if you understand how.
You mentioned we were talking about young players, and I know support for arts education is a huge part of what you do today. Why is it so vital for you to leave a mark on the next and subsequent generation of musicians and other artists?
Well, I'm not. Hey, Mitch, I'm really not thinking about leaving a mark. I'm thinking about doing what a good person should be able to do. I mean, I think it's just natural for me to give back. I've been blessed beyond my dreams. And like I say, I started playing the trumpet when I was 8 because in my grammar school, there was a music appreciation class that we don't have these days in most schools. And there was a trumpet on a table with some other instruments. I happened to pick up the trumpet, and I had that experience. And I'd like to see other kids have that same experience because I think the experience of learning how to play an instrument teaches you some responsibility. You get in touch with your own uniqueness, and it also dovetails into the academics. So it's a win-win.
Was it love at first sight or love at first play for you?
No, it wasn't love at first sight at all because I couldn't get a sound out of it. I thought you just blow hot air into the trumpet and you make a sound. But you know, I learned later that it's you have to buzz into it. And it takes time and effort to get to the point where you can make some sense out of it and have fun. But that whole process was, oddly enough, it was not fun, and then all of a sudden it became fun. And I'd like to see other kids have that experience.
How can you do it well enough so that it goes from being work to being fun?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. You got to have somebody behind you that's kind of prodding you and edging you on and giving you the confidence to be able to keep doing it. You know, when kids ask me, you know, what's the big key? And one of my my great sayings is, you know, while you're sleeping, someone else is practicing. That usually gets them going.
How, at this point, I mean, you've been playing for years. How do you know, as an experienced musician or painter or sculptor or anything, how do you know that you've gotten it right?
Well, you really don't. I mean, I just go with my gut. When it feels good for me, I stop. My premise has always been, if it's fun for me to play, it's going to be fun for someone else to listen to. And I've never tried consciously to make a hit record. I tried to make good records. I tried to make records that were interesting and fun to listen to and somewhat challenging for me, and I just left it at that. You know, you can't rely on what other people are going to say because I remember years ago I was really successful, and we were playing at the Greek Theater here in Los Angeles, and there was a review in the paper the next morning, and it says, Herb Alpert looks like Rex Harrison trying to imitate Miles Davis. I mean, that was the last time I read reviews.
Was there ever a point? It seems like there is never an interview with you that doesn't in some way reference the cover of Whipped Cream and Other Delights, and I'm ashamed to say this interview will be no exception. But was there ever a point at which you tried to run away from that cover? I mean, it is iconic, but at the same time, it does not represent your whole career.
No, you know, actually, when I first saw it, I almost tried to run away from it because this was in 1965. And I thought maybe it was pushing the envelope a little too far. It was kind of risque at that time. But no, I don't run away from it at all because, I mean, it's given me a lot of fodder. Because some people, I actually have met people who bought the album cover and never listened to the music. So, no, it's been unique. And the interesting part of it, you know, it was Dolores Erickson was the model. And she was 3 months pregnant at the time. And that was not whipped cream, it was shaving cream that was on her.
Well, and it's interesting, in preparing for this interview, I was having a conversation with a longtime friend also in the radio industry, and she was saying, and I was agreeing that for us, you know, I'm in my mid-40s, and so is she, it was the album in our respective parents' collection that we probably noticed the first, and for obvious reasons.
Yeah, sure. No, I get tremendous feedback on that whole period there.
And if nothing else, I in comparison, I didn't even notice the Beatles' White Album for a good 5 more years.
Uh-huh. Well, I can understand that. You were a teenager at the time?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so testosterone was happening, huh?
Well, and actually, I hadn't realized, and maybe you can clear this up. Was the shaving cream, which was supposed to be whipped cream, was it supposed to be a wedding dress?
No.
I'd read some reviews that said she was in a whipped cream wedding dress, and I had never taken it from that cover. But I'm glad I asked you because we could put that rumor to rest.
Okay.
When you are doing something. And you describe yourself as this visual musician. Is it important for you to have the same image in your mind from your music as your wife is having?
Oh, gee whiz, that's a good question. I never asked her about that. She's very, very visual. As you know, she wrote this great book called Emotional Memoirs that's super visual, and I never asked her about what she's thinking of when we're performing certain songs.
It would be interesting to get her take. So obviously you're not talking about what's in your mind as you're playing together.
No, I don't think it's important. You know, especially art in general. I don't think you can really articulate what it's about. I can't tell you why I love a Louis Armstrong solo or a Miles Davis solo or Charlie Parker. You know, it's in that otherworldly type of way of communicating. And I think art is that, and painting and sculpting is like that. If you could get in front of a Jackson Pollock painting and you try to analyze it, you're lost. You can't find it. But if you just try to take it in and see how it affects you viscerally, you know, then you have a chance of understanding art. And I think that's what music is all about. You know, there's sometimes you hear a song on the radio and you get that, that feeling, and other times, no. And I think that's the pleasure of art in general. It's that a thing that gets you when it gets you.
I've heard someone describe being in a song in the thrall of a song as being everywhere and nowhere at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's the amazing feeling. I mean, that's why arts education, I think, is so important in our public school system. For some reason, we don't seem to understand the value of art. And it's something that I think could advance our whole concept forward. And it's unfortunate. I was just reading in the paper this morning how, you know, the classical music is suffering, how the individual great orchestras around the country are losing its audience only because, you know, the arts education in school is not getting to that area. You know, the kids are going up to their own water level, which is not very high at the moment.
It is a shame, and you know, I think it's not too far gone yet, though, I wouldn't think. Do you?
No, there's hope. There's definitely hope. But we have to, realize we need to you know, dig in there and do the right thing, because our next generation is depending on it.
Well, Herb Alpert, it has really been a delight to chat with you, and best of luck going forward.
Thanks, Mitch.
Legendary trumpeter Herb Alpert played a concert in Milwaukee in June. Alpert, who is at work on his 34th studio album, spoke with us from his home in Los Angeles. A short break now, and when we return, we meet a writer and farmer from northern Michigan whose new book tells the tale of her real-life struggle to save her family's farm. That's ahead when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.